From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Look, it's Friday. We're in the second hour here, and amazing commentary by our legal correspondent down in New York, Matt Lee, is just like interesting. Yeah, we think the Trump arrest, it just seems like it's not going to happen. I mean, there'll be a lot of hype. I just looked at, just looking at the merits of the case. You know, they did this before. They make a big deal about the grand jury. And, you know, it's very easy to get caught up in the hype, especially when, you know, everybody's singing the same tune across every media outlet and the Twitter spaces are lighting up and everyone's just going crazy with it. And it's really hard to avoid getting caught in the undertow of a narrative that looks like more and more this one looks like it's completely a big fat nothing burger. In fact, they backed off this. Maybe there was pushback. Maybe they would have gone for it if they felt it was going to be less pushback. But, you know, I think the other thing that might have caused them to delay this thing or just kick it permanently into the weeds. And it's this, because there's polling done on, you know, if Trump was to be doing a perp walk, in other words, you know, the whole scene of Donald showing up, he's like, yeah, fingerprint me, baby. Yep, I'm here. What's the charges? Have you got anything? His lawyers are like, you got anything? Taking my client home and appeal this thing into 26 or whatever. There's nothing there. But just that whole scene that would really fire up his base, because it's like the establishment is so craven. The Democrats are so craven and unhinged, still suffering from deep TDS, Trump derangement syndrome, still suffering after all these years. They haven't been able to shake that chronic condition. You know, it's hounding them. It's hounding them. They're all triggered again. And just that whole idea of that, it's going to fire up Trump's base. You know, and if the Democrats, the left and the deep state and all that, if their worst nightmare is Donald Trump winning the presidency again, if that's really their worst nightmare, and just his mere appearance triggers them, that they feel compelled to take him off the campaign trail, prevent him from running, harass, you know, whatever they're trying to do here is hard to tell what the actual strategy is. But anyway, if it's just sort of harass him, if it's to harass him, he's still going to run. If it's to take him out, they might not be able to do that legally. I mean, I don't think so. You can't take the front runner out of a national presidential election in a country like the United States of America at the critical juncture in national and world history. Forget about it. It's not going to happen. So there's nothing. What can they do? The star witness is Michael Cohen, a convicted perjurer. It's impossible. You know, as much as you want to nail Trump, and it seems like the Democrat, the left progressives, they're obsessed again. This has been the failure of, you know, people always say what's left on the left. I love that expression. What's left on the left? Is there anything left on the left? What happened to the left? Why is the left just completely come unglued? And how come they're all just basically themselves, you know, coveting and lording over, you know, little factions of what used to be the Rainbow Alliance? Okay. Why? Why? Because Trump broke them. He broke them psychologically. Trump broke them spiritually. And they haven't recovered. And here's the fatal flaw of it all, you see. And this is why, again, politics and understanding politics, looking at the dynamics of what's going on and understanding the realities of politics, okay? Money can buy you airtime. Money can buy you exposure. It can buy you media impressions, clicks, you name it. It can put you on stage with the top celebrities and whatever. Money can buy you a great venue and promotion, marketing, fill that stadium up. Money can buy all that. But in the game of, and I, not that I like party politics. You know, if we had a world without party politics, all the better. But if there are party politics, it's assumed that the party is going to need an agenda. The party will have to stand for something. We'll have to have a platform, some kind of a platform. And a platform is constructed with planks. And it takes many planks to construct a political platform. And you constantly need to be rearranging some of the planks, but also keeping some of the mainstays there, the fundamental core of your agenda, of your message, your ideology needs to be there as well. But you have to kind of be revising it to stay up with the times. The Republicans in opposition to Obama did a lot of rearranging, a lot of revisions. Look at the Tea Party movement came in. Personally, I think that they stole the concept of the Tea Party from Ron Paul. That was an organic, great constitutional small government, anti-war movement, free market, audit the Fed, all the rest of it. You know the score. And Ron Paul had this Tea Party movement. It was magic. And these astroturfers in Chicago, led by Rick Santelli, the finance guy, I think he had a radio show, I don't know. But anyway, they started the Tea Party movement. They stole the concept from Ron Paul, and they kind of launched this thing, I think, around 2012-ish or something like that. So maybe a little bit before that. So 2010 or something. But they sort of nicked it. And it was an astroturf job. And I always said this, is that there are people looking for careers in politics and around election cycles, presidential election cycles, you see a lot of characters emerge. Characters you've never seen before, no one's ever heard of them before, and all of a sudden, everyone's retweeting them, and they're like influencers, okay? And on the right, when you're in opposition, there's people on the left that feels too crowded for liberals and progressives. And maybe they might be able to, you know, share a couple of values, and some of them disgruntled, maybe not sure where they are on the Nolan chart of political preferences. And they think, well, there's a wave going, the Tea Party out of Chicago, let's ride that. There's some money behind it. Yeah, and the people get in there. There's money there. Some people get in there and sort of put their oar in the water there and go for it and see how far that goes. And likewise, there's positions open. The left, it's all about identity politics right now. But there's room for identity politics on the right. There's room for a moderate fiscal conservatives on the left to counterbalance the rabid borrow and spend communist brigade there. So there's room for everybody, but not what I'm saying is not everybody's has a natural home. In other words, they're not ideologically pure. They're there because there's an opportunity to get in there and be part of something and then see how far they can ride that until the next wave comes along. And of course, the next wave's coming along. So what happened with the Democrats was when Donald Trump came on the scene, everything was pointed, all the battleships, all the ammunition, everything was pointed at Trump. He became an obsession. He became an obsession for the party, for the media, for the Democratic electorate. They were going to bed having nightmares about the Orange Hitler. And it plagued them mentally. And it began to set in as a derangement syndrome, mass psychosis. And then that was followed by mass formation. The mass formation was eliminate Trump. Expunge him from the planet and the psyche of the world, and completely obsessed, unhinged, and everything. And so they're willing to back and go along with any half-cocked, half-baked conspiracy theory about Russia, this, that, and the other. The media was spinning up an anti-Trump story literally two a day straight for 5-6 years. Imagine that. So the media were preoccupied with that, running fake news stories, chasing fake leads, making up whole stories and, you know, legal cases, prosecutions. They just assure that there's something, even if they imagined hard enough, they'll be able to find some dirt and get Trump and nail Trump with it. And they didn't care. They would literally invent things on a daily basis, including the Washington Post and these top titles. Total fail. and the party too. So because of that impeachment, Mueller, Trump, and all this, the Democrats did no work on themselves. They had no introspection. They didn't work on anything substantial in terms of, you know, fine-tuning or reforming any of their policies. Now, in politics, if you do that for a term, you know, or do that for like a half a year, it can have fatal results in the next midterm or national or main election. Fatal results. In other words, if you got lost and you don't know, you're rudderless and directionless for a year, you can blow it for the next 4 years. Okay. Now imagine if you're rudderless and you're completely detached and you're not working or developing any policies, you're not having any substantive debates in terms of like your policy, what your party wants to do. Imagine doing that for 6 or 7 years. It's fatal. It's fatal. The Democratic Party, the left, is a zombie party. It's a zombie ideology. They're just a bunch of raving maniacs and triggered by just about anything. There's nothing bigger to trigger them than Trump. So he's back and they're just getting warmed up. You think wow, they're just going to run out of scandals. No, they're not. They don't get this thing in New York. They got like two others, one in Georgia, and there's another one, escapes my mind. But there's 10 more on the back burner they'll try to spin up. I mean, they'll hound this guy. They ruined his 4-year term in office, just poisoned it, polluted it, ruined it. And they're going to do it again through this campaign cycle. And guess what? None the wiser. They made the same mistake that they did before. The same mistake. They didn't work on themselves, their party, their agenda. Hence, they have done nothing to help the country. They've done nothing to help their communities, their electorate. All they've done is spend, spend, spend. Borrow, borrow, borrow. COVID, Russiagate, blank check for Zelensky, climate change, Green New Deal. Complete mania, okay? That's where they're at, and it's really going to bite them back in the worst possible way. And I believe that the fall, my goodness, if the fall in this next election cycle, if they fall as hard as it appears that they might, it's going to devastate that party forever. They do have some obviously structural advantages in that they are able to control the gears and processes of elections in the swing states necessary to carry a national election. And I always tell people, you don't need to game all the states in the country to throw a national election. All you need to do is be able to control a 2 or 3 precincts within one county, within 4 states. That's it. It's not a big job. And you can carry a close national election. Okay. And this all comes down to statistics, numbers, bottom lines. It's all been figured out in advance. That's all you saw in the last 2 elections. It was modeled ahead of time. They knew where the weak points, where the nodes are, where they need to pour their money, where Zuckerberg needed to dump his $400 million to make stuff happen. Okay. They knew exactly what to do and where to do it. This is a very fine-tuned, high-level game of psychopathy. Trust me. But in the meantime, let's take a break real quick here with TNT, and we will be right back after these messages.
TNT Radio's Chris Smith.
The latest policy stance delivered by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis this week on Ukraine. Now, this will upset the mainstream. He does not want the United States to keep funding Ukraine's defense against Russia's invasion. Now, given the fact that he's got a good chance of becoming the next president, this is quite significant. He will withdraw aid to Ukraine. Now, before you all kick up a stink, I agree with DeSantis because it's Europe, not the United States, which should be pitching in the most, and they are not. What is wrong with many of these European giants? It is in their backyard. It's not in the backyard of the United States. It's certainly not in the backyard of Australia. They always leave it to the United States to mop up their mess. Well, if they couldn't contain Vladimir Putin, and I think that's fair enough when it comes to France, they should do and carry the greatest weight in their support for Ukraine. Interesting comments from Ron DeSantis.
Chris Smith on TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of posts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook
has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
With a compelling perspective on global politics, this is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, folks, listen up. It's Friday. It's all happening. TFI. France is on fire. France, the lid popped off. Exactly what we said. If you're listening to this show, you already knew that. We cover this on Sunday with the Sunday Wire program at 21st Century Wire. That's our weekly omnibus news analysis radio program. Been doing that for 13 years, 12 years, something like that. Yeah, maybe. No, 10 years. Yeah, we have a 10-year anniversary coming up for the Sunday Wire. Interesting. But, and on TNT, we had Freddie Ponton on this program on Wednesday, giving us a lowdown of what's happening in France. And things have escalated significantly over the last 24 hours. There are barricades on all the major roads right across the country. There's mass strikes. The manifestations are coming. Is what they call the strikes and the demonstrations. Manifestation is the manifestation of protest. And so massive industrial action, roads, ports, literally the veins of trade and commerce are going to be blocked up in France. And Charlie Hebdo released their latest cover with a guillotine at the top of the stairs and Macron's head bouncing down the stairs. And it says, will he rebound? So cynical. Will he rebound from this disaster? Yeah, it's kind of hard to rebound when you're beheaded. So they're literally chanting to behead Macron outside the government buildings down in Marseille in the south of France. I mean, extraordinary. We'll talk about that with Freddie Ponton in a minute. We'll connect them for an update on this because we think things are going to go terminal in France, literally. And it's going to have huge implications for the EU and for Ukraine, but also just generally for the political climate in Europe. This could excite a lot of other countries to throw out their WEF stooges out of power. So we'll see if Macron survives. He's got a knack for survivals, that guy does. But before we go break back to our Freddie in a couple of minutes, we'll take a station break in about 7 minutes to connect Freddie from France. Good news. It's not all bad news, folks. There's we have a feel-good story. It's always good to have a feel-good story, isn't it, on Friday. So we've got a feel-good story, and it is this. The World Athletics Association, it's called World Athletics International. So this apparently is the governing body that stages all these major competitions. Sebastian Coe, I believe, he's the head of the organization. He's a former world record holder. And I believe he's a marathon. Yeah, he's a great runner, long distance runner. He's now Lord Coe, president of the governing body of world sport there. It's different from the Olympic Committee. They're still a bit woke. They're still working on them. He stated, as of March 31st, that's this coming week, no athlete that has gone through male puberty will be permitted to compete in female world ranking competitions. Now, I'm going to have to throw a caveat on this because, God, we never get it all, do we? We always got to accept a compromise on this. So no athlete that has gone through male puberty So what happens if you have some crazed maniac parent that wants to put their boy, put little Johnny to become little Janie and to win a gold medal? They're literally going to slave drive them until they get to the Olympics. And to do their transition to prevent them from going through puberty from a boy to a man, and make them into a so-called woman, or is she or they or whatever it is, and then basically, I don't know. Hopefully, that's not going to happen. That's a black swan. So generally, I think this is good. Sharon Davies, British Olympic medal winning swimmer, who's awesome on this issue. She tweeted out today, "This is fantastic. Thank you, Sebastian Coe," she said, "and World Athletics for standing up for female athletes across the world who are worthy of fair sport." Female athletes, okay? Those are biological females, not to be confused with blokes wearing wigs. So this is great. Good on you, Sharon Davies. She's a class act. There's so few of these days. Sharon's a class act. She's amazing. And she's been called a transphobe and all this. But let me tell you something. Here I am staring at the NCAA championships for swimming here last year. And I'm looking at the podium there. And I see two girls, normal height, but probably, 5'4", 5'6". And they're standing there, bronze, University of Texas, silver, forgot what college she's from. This is the collegiate championship. And the gold is a bloke, 6'4" bloke, by the name of Leah Thomas, who allegedly was, quote, transitioning, swam for the boys the year before, then decided to identify as a girl or a woman, and then competing against the girls and breaking all the national records as a boy ranked 456th or whatever. I mean, it's a total joke. It's a complete joke. This shouldn't even be happening. Anyway, World Athletics is going to put an end to it. Going to put an end to it because it's just an awful scene. And I can tell you as a former competitive athlete, not professional, but at a very high level, you can't really be a professional swimmer. Yeah, I think the top tier can. You're talking about, one out of 1,000, one out of 10,000. But anyway, having done that sport, swimming seriously since the age of 7 till 23, and swam in the NCAA myself, and trained with women because it was co-ed training, and I always say, the women, I felt, worked harder than the guys. And although the guys worked hard and we have our, ways of pushing ourselves, I was a sprint, middle distance guy, mainly sprint. So the girls, distance swimmers and all that, they just worked really hard. And they're there, they do the hours, they're there before and after most of the guys, okay? And they worked hard their whole life. They deserve to be on that platform. And when a bloke sails in there at 6'4" with the shoulders and the deltoids, okay, and scooping up all the first places, is something's very wrong with that. That's so Pete Tong, it's not even funny. And people are standing back trying to be politically correct. Oh, we don't intervene. And oh, well, we've got to be diversity, equity, and inclusion. They're basically pushing women out of their own sport. And that's what this is all about. It's about men, literally men, invading women's spaces, invading their activities, and pushing them to the back. Less opportunity for women. Literally men hijacking, coming in and invading women's spaces and pushing them out. That's what it is. It's so egregious. It's obvious to anybody who can see it. But what is the problem with society that they would allow this to happen in the first place? Unbelievable. So rugby's international governing body has also banned, quote, transgender athletes from competing in women's matches. Now, that's a good move. I think we need to do the same with the MMA fighting and the boxing and all that. You can't have guys basically pretending to be women and going in and just blowing doors and beating the living daylights out of actual biological females in those competitive combat sports. It's just out of order. I've seen it a few times. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. And worse, some women that are just hopped up on hormones and who knows what they're taking. You look at someone like Gabby Garcia, the Brazilian MMA fighter, and that looks like it's Jaws from Moonraker. That's what I see. And then I look at pictures of her. She's female. She was female, or she is female, but she was more female before. I look at her a couple of years earlier. It's just normal woman. But they're not just eating McDonald's three meals a day. They're getting roids from somewhere. Like, you don't go from being like sort of slightly masculine women to being, you know, Jaws from Moonraker in like 2 years. It's just completely crazy. But who and what woman on earth would want to get in the ring with that? I mean, literally just get destroyed. You might as well, you know, it's like jumping in the ring with the Incredible Hulk. So crazy, isn't it? Look, let's take a break here. But anyway, that's good news. So no more trans in the world sports. Good. Congratulations, women. You've got your sports back. Okay. Lovely. And we absolutely love all women's sports. And they should be for women. They should be for women. If you want to compete, if you're a man and you want to compete, you have to go with the guys or start your own third category and hope that somebody shows up and buys tickets to watch the competition. Personally, I think it'd be a good one. I think it'd actually be a draw. They can make an economy out of that. There's a budding opportunity there for some promoter in Las Vegas or some entrepreneur in sports, you know, trans world sports, whatever. There used to be a show called Trans World Sports. I remember that. That was CBS or something. Anyway, I'm digressing, and we're going to take a break here and get an update from the situation, the riots happening in France, the protests, the political instability, all this and more on the other side with Freddie Ponton, our guest. This is Patrick Kenningson. You're listening to TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.
President Biden warns we're all damned unless we follow his green policies.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
President Joe Biden gave his climate views, appropriately enough, on the Comedy Channel. Here is a portion of the interview.
If we don't keep the temperature from going above 1.5 degrees Celsius raised, then we're in real trouble. That whole generation is damned. I mean, that's not hyperbole.
First off, that is hyperbole. Second off, no one is damned. The only way we are damned is if we follow the climate agenda and shut down modern society to do absolutely nothing for the climate. Second, the temperature goal of 1.5 C or 2 degrees C were revealed in the ClimateGate emails to be, quote, pulled out of thin air and with no scientific basis. It was called clearly a, quote, political goal. Dr. Roger Pilkey Jr. said it's more grounded in political aspirations than science, and there's essentially no science behind these temperature goals. Yet, we will face the wrath of Mother Nature if we don't follow. Let's end medieval superstition and return to science. Reject the net zero climate agenda. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Speaking on the issues that impact, this is the Patrick Kenningson Show on TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's Friday. We're in the home stretch here, second hour, live broadcast. We've hit some pretty big stories today, and thank you guys for coming along for the ride, wherever you're on the world. We absolutely appreciate and love your listenership here. Now, before the break, we were talking about this situation in France. It has gone a little bit terminal, actually, from when we last spoke to our guest right now on the ground in France. friends, Freddie Ponton. He's an independent journalist there, located among it all. And Freddie, things seem to have escalated a little bit since we last spoke on Wednesday.
Yes, a tiny bit. So we just basically increase a nudge our message to Macron and his government. So yes, it's becoming very, very interesting. A lot of development, a lot of positive development. And yeah, I'm glad to be on the show today, Patrick.
And so you say we, you're talking about the people of France are trying to get a message to the government, to their leader. And they haven't been listening in the government for a while now, and they're hoping, people are hoping that the message is going to get through. What's the message?
Well, the message is very clear. You know, I think it's the majority of people in France wants the movement to increase in capacities, increase in the presence on the ground, and more importantly, I think for the strike to become a general strike in France, not only a couple of industry as we've seen, but really having a strike that paralyzed this country until this government resigns. So it's not about just the 14-9-3. We clearly see now the real France. You know, those that basically were not able to be heard during the vote or during the elections, now raising their voices and saying, look, now we might have made a mistake to re-elect Macron. Many people are saying we didn't re-elect this president with his 28%. So you have a 72% of the country that just doesn't like the guy, doesn't like his government. And obviously, Elisabeth Borne is very unpopular with French people. She's very stubborn, and more importantly, you can see that she's working in Macron's agenda within the parliament. So that's just simply not working any longer. I would say even going to the point to say that the social contract in France is broken as far as the government concerned.
Yes. So I we're looking at the video. We showed some of these on the UK column broadcast today. Did a little segment on France at the beginning of the live program. And there was some footage from a few places around the country, Marseille, and also something from Paris as well. And also in Bordeaux, they basically burned down or tried to burn down the mayor's office down in the city government building. But in Marseille, huge crowds. I think we saw 800,000 up in Paris in the big square. I don't know if that was Bastille Square, but down in Marseille, another big gathering, something like it looked to me like 80,000 people and very aggressive chanting. So this is a lot more rowdy and more kind of focused than the Gilets Jaunes yellow vest protest, Freddie. How would you describe the scenes that you've seen?
Well, you see, the protests were largely peaceful, but the numbers, obviously, there was about 3.5 million people demonstrating across the nation. So that's a record. You know, we have not seen this for the last past 50 years, and that just tells you. And then, of course, the Ministry of Interior, which is the equivalent to Department of Homeland in the United States, only reported 1.08 million attendees, which is a usual practice under Macron's regime. So they clearly are trying to minimize the impact of what has been largely reported on social media, Patrick. So we wanted, obviously, the French legacy media to come and do the right thing and report and show exactly the state of the nation. But as usual, they were pretty much MIA, and they're not covering what's happening on the street apart from degradations or police being attacked or even fires, you know, that you all see on social media across the country. So, yeah, the tone is very, very different. I think just to give you some numbers that might be interesting, it's we got about 450 protesters who were arrested last night. We had about 400 police officers injured, about 1,500 thugs arrested, and That's the balance sheet of the last day. So yes, a massive mobilization, Patrick, that took place in the street, not only of Paris. You know, it's important for people to understand this is happening all across the countries. So we also see something very interesting, which is the participations of a much younger crowd in the processions as well, especially in Paris. We saw literally students and many students joining the ranks and bringing the support to the movement. So that's something new, very refreshing, of course, and it also clearly shows that the youngsters have understood that if they don't join the protest or make their voice heard and show clearly to the government that also the students and the young communities involved in the political debate in France, because they have parents, they have grandparents, which will directly suffer from this 49.3 and from this bill, this pension reform. So they are involved, and they want to make sure the government is counting them in. So that's great. The level of violence is rather unprecedented. We saw the Yellow Vest movement. We all remember what we saw and what happened. But I've never seen the police so tired and definitely feeling the fatigue, because this protest has been going on for more than just a few days. They've been going on for 10-15 days for some of the people. So the people have been on the street for a very long time, and I think the police is starting to feel a little bit that pressure, that fatigue, and clearly the level of violence has taken a different level now. And we see a lot of stones, a lot of big stones being thrown at the police. We saw some police guys going down, knocked down. This is not pretty. I mean, this is, what you would expect to see from a revolution. You know, I mean, we don't have any weapons. We don't have any protections. Let's forget that we're going out there with our bare hands. So we're trying to tell the police, join us. And we saw some of the police taking the helmet down, trying to say and to appease the crowd and say, look, we're not against you. But that's just a small minority. You know, in Paris, really, these brigades are acting like thugs. They are beating people on the head with their baton. They really have absolutely no regard. They are not bringing peace. They are bringing chaos into this, what is legal protest. These are legal protests. These are strikers, and they should not be in the situation where we found them yesterday.
And you probably saw this footage. I think you or somebody had shared this on your Twitter feed. And by the way, if you're listening and you want to keep good updates on this, especially in the English language, follow at LFC News Media. That's Freddie Ponton, or just put Freddie Ponton in the search bar on Twitter, and you'll see the French flag bleeding red coming up in your search bar. But it was Freddie. The scene was this. It was police, and I don't know what rank or what detachment they are, if they're gendarmerie or police, and they took their helmets off, and they joined the march with the protesters, like a lot of them. So I think that I might have been in Paris, I'm not sure, but it's not something you see regularly. It's kind of a rare occurrence, but it does happen. And what do you think about those sort of scenes? Is that an indication that maybe there's a lot more, common cause, let's say, with people in the police and the people in the street?
Well, it obviously, we don't know what's going on behind the scene. I've heard rumors that the police were trying to negotiate a deal with Macron with regards to the retirement and the pension reform, trying to get their own deal as far as being completely having the immunity against this reform, so they don't have to work until 64 years old. So we don't know what's going on really. But Macron's speech today in Brussels during this European leaders meeting in Brussels this morning was very clear that he asked the police to respect the ontology, the ranks. The orders came from the top, and he's asking basically these orders to be kept and making sure they are, the command is in control, because there is definitely people in the police that are starting to get tired and sick of it. And what you saw on this video was not in Paris. I think it was in another big city in France, but it was not in Paris. And we'll see that. We'll see more as it keeps on going, because obviously this is only the beginning, Patrick.
Yeah, we'll probably see more. And the fire brigade, and that's not unusual, because a fire brigade is a different type of individual. But they've basically joined in solidarity with the people in the protest. They've come out. They're visible, wearing their uniforms. Basically, they're with the people. So it's kind of like that kind of, you know, that you remember during COVID with the vaccine passports and the mandates, you had this massive solidarity with all these different, you know, guilds and professions, the nurses, fire department, and all this. They're, you know, in there with the people in the street. Total solidarity. We're starting to see the same thing again. Massive solidarity across all different spectrums of French society. So this is interesting how quickly it's come together, Freddie. Are you surprised?
No, not at all. I think it's been in the making. I think the efforts from not only the unions but also the strikers. I think the strike gives a lot of legitimacy to this protest, and because strikes are completely legal in France, you know, this is protected by the constitution. So I think the not only one unions but really across sections of the unions have come together at once, you know, and I think that's really when people, when unions, when workers are coming together from all walk of life, from different sectors of industry, I think this is the result of that, is this unifications. Doesn't matter how much you earn, where you come from, you're fighting for the same thing. And one of the things that people are fighting is the pensions reform, but it's also a list of doléances, a list of, you know, of frustrations, you know, coming out of the COVID, what's going on in Ukraine. All that is part of this frustration. You know, we cannot just say it's the pension reform. That would be absolutely wrong to say that. It's part of it, but it's not only the pension reform. So it's a complete degradation of the quality of life in France, and more importantly, the deteriorations in terms, as far as the communications between the people and the government. There's a huge gap there, and nobody understands Macron and his government, and he needs to go. And that's the message. It couldn't be clearer than that. He has to go. They have to resign.
And so if Macron does resign and does the honorable thing, clearly that would be the honorable thing to do, what then would happen? We're talking about a date set for another election, maybe a new government coming. How would that play out?
Well, there is different instruments within the constitution that allowed us to depose the president. We can use Article 68 of the constitution that basically clearly demonstrate, and it's very clear about, you know, what is entitled and why and how you can have recourse to the Article 68, and especially when the president is basically behaving in a way that is against the interest of the French people. So obviously a lot of the discussions also are regarding this kind of proximity, this strange kind of alliances that Macron and his government has with NATO and the US corporates and Biden and the European unions, and people are starting to awaken to the fact that France has really lost a degree of sovereignty that is just very difficult, that makes France very difficult to govern. We're taking our orders not only in Paris, not in only in our administration or central administration. We are taking orders at regional level. You know, budgets are coming from the European Union to regions. And that has been always the plan, as far as the European concern, to divide Europe in regions. So we're seeing this effect slowly coming through, where regions are affected but directly, not only by central government in Paris, but affected directly by the European policy at regional level. That is extremely dangerous, because France fundamental rules is to govern by communes, by governing by regions and making sure they are always that form of sovereignty, like you will have in the United States with a certain sovereignty from the states, you know, not being always under the pressure from federal government. Well, here it's a bit the same, but this has been degraded over the years and now has moved. This power has been given through the financial system to the European Union. Very dangerous, Patrick, very dangerous thing to do in France.
So basically Brussels, through the funding mechanisms, can bypass Paris. So to directly from Brussels to the regions, and in this way, basically, you know, really degrading the sovereignty of the region, but also the country as a whole. Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's the idea, is to reshape Europe. You know, I think because France has a lot of borders. Obviously, we have border with Spain, we have border with Italy, we have border with Germany, Switzerland. I mean, you name it. We have many, many borders. So what they want is to obviously break this barrier. So I think there's a kind of a visual, there's a kind of a ideological reflection behind this. The idea is to break the borders, to break these borders, to make them seamless, if you will, and then reshape this region, not according to the language, not according to the nationality, but according to, you know, what the European feels that this basically is considered or should be considered as a region. It's very, very dangerous because to have that, it's the end of sovereignty and it is the end of the state. So how the European Union, which is made of member states, can exist without states? Clearly, this is a global agenda shaping up at a very high speed.
So that's interesting. And the region could overlap between different countries. So if you're in, you're the south of France, or you're, you know, where Marseille is, for instance, or something like that. And then you have, if there's a region there in the south of France and it straddles over, it captures Monaco, it captures northern part, Genoa, in part of northern Italy, northwest Italy. And that becomes a region, and maybe a piece of, Switzerland as well. And so so that's pretty much the end of national sovereignty. So you think that how crucial is the Macron regime? Has Macron done anything to advance that globalist agenda? In other words, selling his country out and degrading the sovereignty. Is that a noticeable thing under Macron?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's an instrument, you know, he's not a decision maker, clearly. He's just an instrument which is used by the World Economic Forum and big corporations and obviously the banking industry where he comes from. You know, Macron is a merger and acquisition guy. That's all it is. He has no real communication skill, no diplomatic skills whatsoever. We saw that with Ukraine. He's completely out of his depth, you know. So we can see he's been instrumentalized in order to deindustrialize and also to break down every single facet of our economy. And also to really tear apart the notions of nationalism, the notions of nations and border and sovereignty. That's words that, you know, Macron cannot hear. He's a 100% globalist. He's a European absolutely in his soul. And he'll do everything that is in his power to demolish that. And we saw that across all these decisions about the reform, nobody really understands them. People are focusing on the age and 64 years old instead of 62. But that's not what it's all about. Mm. You know, we're only talking about 2 million people in France that will benefit maybe from this reform, not, you know, 72 million people. So we're talking about a very small portions of France that could benefit, and said it would, but it could benefit from that. The real reason behind this reform, Patrick, is actually the lobbying of big global firms like BlackRock and also the big French corporations lobbying the French government to lower the tax, and with the promise of increasing the employment rates in the country. So that's the game that has been played. The big corporates are basically taking the government by the throat and telling them, if you don't lower the tax, we're not going to employ and so on and so forth. Page 11 of the budget, you know, the 2023 budget, which was released by the French Ministry of Economy, is very clear, and I invite everybody to read it. It's very clear what it's all about, and now you get to understand what this reform is all about. It's once more to look after the big cappy, and we are sick of it.
So that's the game. So what is the corporate tax rate at the moment in France? It's probably quite high, I would imagine, 30% or something like
that. It's around that area, you know, depending on the sector, but it's around 14 something. You know, but it's really not about that. It's really about saving money and bringing more money into the budget. Because obviously with COVID, with all this Ukraine and all that, France is, you know, running out of budget. So they need to take the money from somewhere. So the only way to do it is to use the capitalists and these big corporations and then create a kind of a urgency for money, bring this into the equation of a budget in order to do favors to the big corporations, whilst, you know, pretending that they're doing this to employ. But we know that that's not creating employment. They cash this money in. They never actually put that money back down into the economy, and that will benefit the people. That's a lure and that's a lie. And we know that. All French people know that. It doesn't benefit any of us at all.
Mm. And meanwhile, they're just doing crazy things with energy policy that are, you know, driving up the cost of not just power and energy, but all goods and services are going to get pushed up. And, you know, if the city municipality, wherever you're in a town or you're in a village or a city or something like that, if the city budget is getting eaten up by outrageously priced, you know, electricity and fuel, that means there's just less money to spend on real stuff, other things that need to be done. So it's a disaster. The whole thing, especially from the energy point of view, it's been a total disaster for Europe, for European countries.
Yeah, unfortunately, Germany has been, I wouldn't say smart, but they definitely did their utmost to degrade the French energy market, to absolutely flatten the energy market. And they've played a very dirty game. The only reason why they were able to do that is because of Ursula von der Leyen. She was appointed almost, so sometimes we wonder if she was just not appointed to actually take care of the French electricity market, which the energy market is very strong, very independent, in excess. So we obviously, the German doesn't want to have a neighbor that is much stronger. Energy is not a commodity today. It's not just a commodity. Energy is a real political weapon, Patrick.
Yep.
And that's what they've done. They politicized it and weaponized the energy sector.
Oh, you're so right there. It is a political tool, and it can be weaponized. So we have a weaponized financial sector, you know, with sanctions and currency wars, and then you have the energy sector. It's being weaponized, and there's a lot of leverage involved in that. And then, you know, the public health issue is the same. It's weaponized. Or von der Leyen, she did her bit for Operation Warp Speed in Europe, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. I mean, she's definitely, you know, she's been in bed with NATO from day one. Not only her, we saw Macron also very involved, going to Washington as well, meeting with the Atlantic Council and so on. So we have we track them down, and I've done a lot of research about that. And you can really trace their movements and what they do, who they're meeting. And we can clearly see that the NATO is brought in to play a major role in the control and in the control demolitions of Europe, but also within this security, urban security, and so on. So NATO is in the background, if you will. But I can tell you, if things were to go to the next level, not only in France, but it's starting to pick up, because clearly we see, and we got so many messages, Patrick, from Spain, from Athens in Greece. We have people in front of the French embassy in different countries protesting in support of the movement. So we can see that this could really get viral. And if it gets viral in Europe, I can tell you, we're going to see NATO coming out of the woods. And I warned about that. I wrote about that. And I keep on saying NATO is a major player. And it's really something we need to watch. We need to get NATO out of Europe, and we need France definitely to talk about sovereignty and definitely start to talk about Frexit, because we cannot govern a country if we're not controlling our defense, our economy, our borders. There's no way we can manage, and we don't manage even our own currency, waiting for a CBDC to come in. I mean, this is the worst scenario for a country, and I think it's time to react, and the French people are definitely have the pulse, I would say, on that.
I've got about 30 seconds left. Are a lot of French people aware of the CBDC agenda, the cashless society agenda?
Yes, it's going around on social media. It's going around. You know, it's not something that is not known. Obviously, the elders, they're not really into this kind of social media things. But anybody that has a social account and social media has an interest in what's going on in the world knows about CBDC. So yes, there's a debate and a dialogue around this subject.
Thank you very much, Freddie Ponton, independent journalist from France. Much appreciated.
It's a pleasure, Patrick.
And also, thank you to Matthew Russell Lee, Inner City Press in New York City, on the ground with the Trump case there. Look, that's all we've got this week. Patrick Henningsen, your host. It's been real. It's been intense. What a week it's been. Wow. So stay here on TNT, top of the hour news headlines, and I believe it's the Jesse Zurowell show after these messages at the top of the hour. But I'm Patrick Henningsen signing out, folks. See you later. Have a good one.